We're back with Lake Effect on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. Most of us might be familiar with the Disney version of Beauty and the Beast, but the opera of the same name, staged by the Skylight Theater Company, is an entirely different spectacle based on the original darker fairy tale. The 18th century light opera is a unique reimagining featuring dance and larger-than-life puppetry.
James Ortiz is the director as well as the scenic and puppet designer for Beauty and the Beast, and he came to Milwaukee from New York to put his talents to the test. Most recently, Ortiz was the recipient of the 2016 Obie Award for Puppet Design for his critically acclaimed off-Broadway show, The Woodsman.
He and Skylight prop director Lisa Schlenker joined forces to build and design puppets for Beauty and the Beast, and Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski went down to the Skylight Theater to meet them and the puppets they created.
James and Lisa, welcome to Lake Effect. Thanks for allowing me to meet you here amongst the puppets.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Thanks.
So to start, what came first, the decision to do the opera or the desire to do puppets for a show?
What a great question. It's like chicken or the egg. I was approached about a year ago about doing this show after the head of Opera Saratoga, because, of course, this show is a co-production between this opera company and one in upstate New York. And the plan is that in the summer we'll be doing this show there also. Different cast, whole new thing. But I was approached by him. He had saw a show that I had done in New York, which had a great deal of puppetry and straight acting and sort of an odd blend, sort of hard to explain in a couple of words. But he was sort of like, we have this really odd old opera that is usually sort of stuck in children's theater world. And I'd love to like talk about trying to figure out a fresh take on it. Do you have anything? And I was like, well, send it to me. Let me listen to it. And the first time I heard it, I was not entirely sure where to go. Also, it was all in French, so I really was struggling. But I read through the script, and we started talking and talking and talking, and I sort of went, I think there's a fun opportunity here for puppetry and acting, and, you know, there's something inherently magical about puppets alone, but I think what's more exciting is when we have characters interacting with them. It sort of imbues them with power, and it just makes everything more heightened and magical.
I think part of where the magic in puppetry is for me and for the folks that I work with who've been building with us is that connection to that childlike suspension of disbelief that we all want to bring in to opera and music theater.
Absolutely.
When we come in and see a piece of work like that on stage, but puppetry just transports us there immediately. Mm-hmm. And it's a joy to see that on stage, and it's a joy to build that type of prop and that type of puppet.
A comment you made before when you were doing your first puppetry production was that there's also something inherently eerie about puppetry. And I imagine there's tapping into that component for this show, because the Beast here, your rendition, it's kind of reminds me more gargoyle-like compared to what we've seen in the past.
Not the Disney version.
Exactly, not the Disney version. So what components of this opera did you want to be expressed in your puppets?
That's a great question. I mean, you mentioned sort of the darkness and the eeriness, and I think actually the story is quite, it's not clean. It's not one thing. It's not just a one-note Disney situation. I mean, we have a story about a girl who gets sold by her father to live in a house with a monster. Let's talk about that. Let's not pretend that's not the story, you know. And then, in order to save his and his own family's life, and then of course she's a prisoner, even though she may not think that she is, or he tries to make her feel like she is. There's a lot of like uncomfortable layers that are here that are very present in any grim fairy tale and very present in every sort of original folk tale. For me, it was more about embracing all of those things, right? And I think in terms of like how to sort of put all those things in the show itself is a weird hodgepodge of bizarro things. It's an opera, but there's also a great deal of spoken text in it, which is sort of, it's a proto-musical. It was in the 1700s, and it's one of the first, it's on the way to what we would later turn into a musical. the songs come when characters need to express emotion. There's also ballet dance. It's also, if you break apart the story, we have a family drama, we have a love story, we have high comedy, we have low comedy, we have
a morality tale.
We have a high fantasy. We also have a very intimate, high stakes thriller at certain moments. It's too many. So it was literally like me going, I have no idea how to put any of these things together. I was just sort of going, this is such a weird piece. I don't know what to do. And then, not to get too long into this, but the way that this opera has been described, it sort of falls under different categories of opera, right? And I'm not going to say all the French correctly, but it's sort of this, it means a comedic opera with dance and music, brawl. And you go, what does that mean? So kind of just taking that, sort of like, right, all of these different things don't have to go together. The point is that they're making this cacophonous, beautiful collage. And in the Beast puppet, it became sort of, that was the best, he became the mascot of that, he is... There's goat part, and there is gorilla part, and there is bird, and there is a reptile, and a lot of sort of looking at a lot of sort of Baroque architecture and Baroque armor, and just kind of going, let's put it all in. And that was sort of the point.
And then putting on top of that the personality and the heart into the design as well as into the puppeteering.
Absolutely.
Of it.
Well, and I imagine there is an extra complication versus a stage play with puppets. Now we have an opera with puppets.
Yes.
And it looks like you need at least several people to operate the Beast. So adding the component of not only acting but singing with puppets and having multiple people, how do you bring all those together to sink in and express one character together?
A lot of rehearsal.
A lot of rehearsal. We actually, generally opera rehearsal is quite short by comparison to sort of straight theater, mostly because the performers are so prepared, they come in day one off book and they know all the music and everything. So it's more of a question of sort of staging. But in this case, because the puppetry is so integral, we started about 3 days earlier and I just had those puppeteers and some of the people in those scenes. And I just sort of warned the actress playing our beauty and the actor playing the voice of the Beast. It's going to be a lot of work and we're going to be sort of hold please and, taking our time. And, before anything, we sat around a table and read through the whole scenes and went, okay, hold, let's stop and talk about this and where the beat changes and what does he want in every moment and really kind of throwing a verb on it. To shame, to love, to kiss. What is he doing in that moment? And until we got all four puppeteers plus the voice actor to sort of agree on one thing, which was not difficult to do, I should say. They're all wonderful. But it was a thing of everybody in the room going, oh, I see. And they all started advocating for the character and all started loving that character, which that's the most vital thing to do, especially when you're going to be stuck inside of a big foam body.
Yes. Well, and you mentioned those different types of emotions. So going into the design of the puppet, what did you want in its head, its arms, its shoulders to express those things subtly? How did you design it from paper to what we have in front of us?
Yeah, it's a great question. Well, we knew that, of course, he has to be imposing. First of all, more than anything else, he needs to be imposing, right? The first time you see him, you need to see what the other characters in the play see, which is yikes. And then we need to find something else in there. So, it was easy to kind of make something big look frightening. That's not the difficult part. The other thing is going, what else can he do? So we did some very subtle things, and, we could have really tricked out him even more, but it wasn't necessary. He has a great deal of range of motion in his head, which gives him a lot of options. His mouth moves, and also he has a little action in his ears, which actually does most of the work for us. In another version, there could have been eyebrows and eyelids and all kind of stuff, but at the end of the day, it's not necessary. And he has one little extra thing because he walks on all fours like a gorilla. He has front forearms that are quite heavy. And we gave him fingers that can open and touch, very sort of Michelangelo Sistine Chapel stuff, because we just needed him to have some gentle contact with her. And if that was the way, then that was it. But beyond that, it's actually, it's just the puppeteers filling it in different ways.
I think one of the things that helps the puppeteers do that job of inhabiting, the four of them working together as a team to inhabit the Beast, is the range of motion in the other joints. Mm-hmm. So the torso is, supported by two puppeteers, one of whom is piloting the head, which is where the bulk of the character nuance happens, the other of whom is piloting the back legs. Then there's a puppeteer outboard on each of the massive forearms that also work the wrist and finger point. And for all of those joints, we tried to get them as humanly articulated as possible, because I think that level of recognition, subliminal recognition on the part of the audience, that there's some human movement in the shoulder, in the elbow, in the hip, in the leg, I think that conveys a sense of life, and it really helps the puppeteers do their job.
Absolutely. And even in some of the details of sort of the face sculpt, you know, I was talking to you about this, of this thing of like, we need to make a face that can be the 2 to 5 different emotional extremes that he has in the show. So it's a bizarre thing, because you're kind of, what does that mean? Are you sculpting a blank face? Not really. You're sculpting things that have forms in them that can help you go from one extreme to the other, just by how they fill it.
Right.
Yeah. By them going inside of it. Tells you so much. And you're seeing the brows change, and you're seeing the eyes widen, and which is not happening.
Do you think there's also something just about the story, Beauty and the Beast, that makes it user-friendly, so to speak, for puppets, because it is about transformation? So it's kind of a natural fit to just experiment with it?
Totally, 100%. I think, you know, normally this opera is done with an actor wearing a mask, sort of like a gargoyle-y face, and then he takes it off in the last moment, and that's how he's the prince. And you go, sure, that's an option. I think since it is about transformation, I also think a lot of it is about embracing otherness, and embracing, I mean, maybe something for now, embracing that which is alien, embracing that which is
somewhat frightening.
Frightening, and something that we immediately feel we should shun. It's interesting in sort of fleshing out the characters of Zamir's sisters, who are completely horrifyingly opposed to a lot of change. There's something really exciting about that being what the story is about. It's about facing your fears and growing up and all of the above, and actually, I think, as schmaltzy as this is, I think it's about the transformative power of love.
I think that's the perfect way of describing it. Yeah. And these are epic topics in proportion to many stories that we tell on stage. Yeah. And I think opera lends itself to the epic. It lends itself to the power. And puppetry also lends itself to the epic fantasy version.
I think so, too.
What has been the favorite challenge of the show for both of you?
The favorite challenge? Oh, you should go first.
Oh, I mean, you know? I think just completing the puppets in a way that measures up to James's standards and my standards of quality, and also allows the performers to embrace and work with them for a lengthy period of time. I think that was the challenge, just completing everything within our resources to the degree of...
Both of our standards.
Yeah. It's been a challenge, but a wonderful experience, and an experience that everybody on the build team in the prop shop really embraced. Everybody stepped up. We all learned not just one or two new things, but a lot of new things.
Yes.
And that's why we do what we do.
Yeah, completely, I agree. And it was amazing, because I showed up about 2 weeks before rehearsal began, and it's insane that all of it happened in about 2 weeks, you know, that the puppets that you see in this room were made in that time, which is bonkers, right? After a lot of R&D and a lot of prep and da-da-da, it wasn't like we showed up going, I don't know, what do you want to do? You
know? I mean, James and another puppet project manager, Jessica Scott, invited me to New York, and we R&D'd together. I picked their brain, and they taught me a tremendous amount in a very concentrated 4-day period.
Yeah.
And then I came back, and we started actually with the less challenging Wind Spirit puppet, so that we could really get our local build team people comfortable with the materials, comfortable with, you know, how to machine them, how to surface treat them. the movement, engineering. So we started on the less complicated piece first. Yeah. And then James joined us, and we just all jumped right into the beast.
Mm-hmm. We totally did. It was really interesting to sort of... I was learning a lot from you guys, and, you know, it was great because, you know, building a puppet is so unlike building a set,
right,
and so unlike building a piece of machinery that you would use for something else, because, of course, you're making something that is in between a prop and a costume. Mm-hmm. You're making something in between those things, and it needs to be lighter than all that, and it needs to be able to, you know, the things that you would use to make anything else, you can't do that because it just, A, it's going to weigh them down, or it won't move the right way, and it's this bizarre, like, I could feel the whole room one second I showed up going like, okay, like trying to 360 and mm-hmm. recalibrate, which they did in 17 seconds, and I was still going like, how do you paint, you know? it was really extraordinary to watch.
We've not done a lot of puppets of this scale, and so that was a special challenge. We haven't built anything approaching this scale since we built the set of Little Shop Puppets, the Audrey Plant set, and I charged that build as well with a great team of people. But because that particular set of puppets has to do an array of very different tasks, mm-hmm. the materials and techniques were equally different,
yeah.
From this. So there really wasn't a comparison in
yeah.
our experience.
Yeah.
Back when Nancy Aldrich was here in Milwaukee with Polaris Puppet Theater, Colin Cabot had a great interest in puppets and was with the Skylight at the time. We started learning and developing an interest in puppets, you know, 25, 27 years ago. But there aren't that many opportunities for a company of the Skylight's size to really delve deeply mm-hmm. into puppetry as an art form and as a storytelling device. So this is really a tremendous and rare privilege.
Well, it certainly looks like you've seized this opportunity to good measure, that everything looks amazing, and I can't wait to see it in action.
Me too.
Yeah. Thanks, James. Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you.
Thank you.
James Ortiz is the director, as well as the scenic and puppet designer for Skylight Theater's Beauty and the Beast. Lisa Schlenker is the prop director for Skylight. The show premieres tomorrow night, and it runs through March 26th. You can find out more about the show, as well as see video and photos of the Beast puppet in action at WUWM.com.